I'm Matt Burnside. This is just a little hack that I put together with Matt Blue and Angelo Scaramedes. This will be a quick talk. This is a relatively simple little toy. The motivation for this whole thing is probably something that you've all run into, and this was something that actually happened, where we had a remote machine that we weren't sure, but we thought maybe this machine has been rooted. But it had some stuff on it that we needed to get, so, well, we're okay, we can SSH into that machine, we've got keys set up, we're okay with SSHing to it. But we had to run sudo, and as soon as we type sudo, we see this password prompt. And now we're starting to think, I don't think I want to type my password into this box. It's probably okay, but if it's not, probably not good. So this is the germ. This is where we started. So the rest of the talk, I'll give a quick overview of sudo. I'll talk a little bit about the SSH protocols, show what we did, brief analysis, wrap up. I hope this is no surprise to any of you. Sudo lets you run commands as other people. Standard case is to run a command as root. What we care about here is the authentication. How do you prove that you should be allowed to run sudo? Default is it asks for a password. I work pretty much only on OpenBSD, so anything I say will apply to OpenBSD. I assume it applies fairly universally, but I'm just covering my butt here. I know that OpenBSD has these. SSH, hopefully no surprise to you guys either. Remote shell. The default OpenSSH, the same way as passwords, but the key difference is that you got this thing going on as well. The SSH protocol suite is three major packages: the transport, the authentication, and the connection. So what we really care about are the first two. So the transport protocol is the first thing that gets set up. And this is the protocol that gives you the encryption and the integrity. The first part of it is authenticating the server host, so this is the part of SSH that asks you, do you recognize this long hexadecimal string that everybody, you know, ignores? The OpenBSD guys have a cool thing coming down the pipe, it sounds like, where they're going to make something graphical there, that'll be cool, but for the moment, it kind of sucks. But anyway, all right. So authenticate the server, you do a Diffie-Hellman key exchange, so you share a key. Now we have a channel where we can encrypt and max stuff. Once that's set up, now you run the user authentication protocol. And this is the part where you, as the client, prove who you are, that, you know, you are who you claim you are to the server. The RFC requires two protocols. It requires a password and it requires a public key. So how does the password part work? Well, we have our client, we have our server. So we've already set up the transport layer protocol. So we already have encryption and integrity. So over that protocol, we send this message, which is a request for user authentication. We tell them our username, we say we want to authenticate using password, and we send the password in plain text. Now, it's not really a plain text because it's been encapsulated by the transport layer, but once it arrives at the server, now it really is in plain text. The server takes the password, checks it against the password database or LDAP or whatever. If you're okay, it sends back a user auth success, and you know, SSH continues from there. Okay, this is very easy. It's the default, so that makes it really easy, but number one, it's susceptible to brute force. We all see that SSH brute force, you know, screaming through our logs. And, of course, there's this problem, which is if the server's compromised, you just sent your password in plain text to it. So, what about the other one? This is the public key version of SSH authentication. The first step is to generate your keys. So, I don't know if this notation is familiar to you, but this is... You generate your key pair, your private key and your public key, and then you encrypt your private key with a password. That's what this is saying. So you take your private key, you put it in your .ssh folder, you take the public key, and you put it in the authorized keys file on the server. Right? You have to tell the server what your public key is, so that's the means that you do that with. Now we're just going to run the same protocol, but we run it now with SSH, or sorry, with public key. So we send the same packet type, the user auth request, with their username, and this time we tell them we want to do public key authentication, and we tell it what algorithm, is it RSA, is it DSA, and then we send a public key and maybe certs or whatever else might be incorporated into this as well. The server set checks the public key that you just sent it against the contents of the authorized key file, make sure that the public key is actually there, meaning that you actually do have permission. If it's there, it responds and says, okay, you're good to go ahead with the public key authentication. Now the client has to actually prove that he has that private key. So you have to give it the password, so it's going to ask for your password to decrypt that private key. It then uses the private key to sign this from here to here and send the signature along with the rest of that message off to the server. The server checks that, makes sure that it verifies, makes sure the signature is legit. If it is, you can go ahead. All right. So number one, that's more difficult to set up. Marginally, the main problem with it is that it's not the default. That's really what makes it more difficult. But there's nothing sent to the remote host that could get you in trouble. That's the key. All the remote host ever gets is a signature and a public key, but that's public by definition. So you can be a little more confident when you're connecting to a remote host if you know, you're using this, that nothing bad is going to happen to you. It does require that you type in the password navigation. Okay. So people don't like using the password navigation connection, so they invented this SSH agent, which manages your private keys for you. So you start it up, it asks you for your password once, and now it just keeps the keys in its little pool there, and you know, parcels them out when they're needed. And the way this works is we have our agent. I use a little outline to represent the agent. You give it the key to the private key, the password to the private key. You give it once, and it sets up a tunnel to the machine to your machine that you're running on. And this is called the SSH auth SOC. This is the Unix domain socket. It's actually just a file, essentially. It's how you can look at it. And the location of that file is an environment variable, SSH auth. So you open up that file, and now you read and write, and that's basically your channel for communicating with the agent and asking it to authenticate stuff. So now you want to connect to a remote machine. You send that same user auth request message off to the remote machine. It responds and says, okay, go ahead with the public key authentication. Now your SSH just opens up that tunnel to the agent and says, here's what I want you to go ahead with. The agent now does the actual job of signing with the private key, generates a signature, which your SSH now just forwards onto the server. That's great, but what if you want to make multiple hops, all right? Now this is where this agent forwarding thing comes in. And the idea is once you have that OpSoc, that SSH OpSoc thing, why not just create a new one of those on each subsequent hop as you're SSHing from this machine to that machine to that machine, and just have them all connect back to your original agent? So this actually works pretty well. So what ends up happening is you have this initial tunnel here between your agent and your client. You connect one hop away, and you just extend the tunnel onto that machine. So now on this machine, there's an SSH OpSoc variable as well. And that gives it access to the agent, just like the local host had access to the agent. Now you connect onto another machine, and we do the same public key protocol, and we can just roll ahead. It's great. All right, so this gives us a little extra convenience. We still have the nice property that the private key and the password never appear on the wire. We are susceptible to something called agent hijacking, which we'll talk about in a minute. All right, so we have this problem now where we're using SSH, we like to use sudo, and we don't want to put the plain text password on the server. So this occurs usually, I guess, you know, if you don't trust the remote host for whatever reason. And we're worried about them capturing our password. So it would be nice if we could use that same infrastructure, that same public key infrastructure, to do the authentication when we sudo, just like we did the authentication when we actually connected to the machines. So this is where we come in. We just want to hook these two things up. Relatively simple, pretty straightforward, sort of. So what we did was we built a BSD auth module. So BSD auth is the OpenBSD equivalent to PAM. I don't know if any of the, I know like BSD OS uses BSD auth. I'm not sure if any of the other BSDs actually use this. Somebody here probably knows that better than I do. So anyway, BSD, our OpenBSD uses BSD auth. Easy enough to port this if you wanted to. The problem with just writing a module that is going to do the authentication for you is we didn't want to dump the whole chunk of SSH into a module to implement this whole segment of the SSH protocol. We don't want to just duplicate that code. So we realized we could actually do this in a much simpler fashion by just leveraging the SSH OSSOC that's already there. So we're just going to talk to that tunnel. Let me show you how that works. Well, just in diagram fashion, you've got your sudo. When you go to authenticate, we're going to authenticate with the login pubkey module instead of like a password module, which is the default. And login pubkey is just going to grab the end of the OSSOC and do the authentication for you. So, great. Here's what the protocol looks like. So, we have 3 points of interest, time goes this way. So we start here where you type sudo ls. Sudo activates the authentication module, which is login pubkey. Login pubkey starts up, finds the OSSOC module, or sorry, the OSSOC environment variable. That tells you what, where the file is to actually get the information packet, opens that up, and sends a get identities message over that wire. When the agent gets that, it responds with a list of all the public keys representing private keys that it is governing. So we get the public keys back. The login pubkey module now, all it has to do is run through those public keys and find one that corresponds to one in the allowed keys file in your SSH folder. If it finds one, it replies and says, okay, make a signature on this key for me. The agent does the signature, responds. They have to verify that that signature is actually legit for that public key. If it is, tell sudo to go ahead and do your LS or what have you. So the upshot is now you just do a sudo -a. -a tells it what authentication module to use. Tell it some key and you do an LS, and you're off to the races. All right. So I'm just going to quickly talk about a couple. Issues now that are going to happen if you start actually using this. So first of all, from a high level, we're not really adding any new functionality on top of agent forwarding. That is, the agent forwarding tunnel is already there. If you're using agent forwarding, the tunnel is already there. So anything that we do, a bad guy can do too. So from that standpoint, we're only going to be susceptible to stuff that agent forwarding is already susceptible. So what I'm saying is, if the agent tunnel is there, anything that we do, the bad guy could have done as well. So all we have to do is look at what are the security risks with using agent forwarding. All right, so what are the risks with forwarding? Well, the main one is this thing, agent hijacking. The thing about this tunnel is that it's basically an oracle for a bad guy, where you put anything on that tunnel, and your agent's just going to sign it and send it back. So there's no reason a bad guy, if they can find it and have the right permissions to access it, can't ask it to sign the certificate or sign the auth request going to a machine that you don't mean to go to. Right. So you forward an agent to a machine, there's a bad guy there who has access to that end of the tunnel. They can now use that to essentially hop to any other machine that you've put your public key in the authorized key file. Okay. So how do we check against that? Well, we make the socket hard to find. It's in a randomly chosen directory name. The file itself is randomly chosen, so it's not predictable. Also, the permissions are said very restricted, but root can still get. So if you're connecting into a machine where root is host, you may be in trouble. So how can we prevent that? Well, one thing that we can do that will help is we'll say, all right, we're not going to blindly sign anything. We're going to force our agent to only sign stuff that we approve. So the infrastructure that's out there already has something that will sort of give you this, which is when you add a key to your agent, you can give it this dash C flag here. And that means that every time that key gets used, it's going to prompt you for the password for that key again. So that's great. That kind of solves it. But it still leaves open one problem, which is if sudo itself is compromised, for example, you could do a sudo ls, you're going to expect to be prompted for a password from this. But if sudo was compromised, you're not going to necessarily be signing what you thought you were signing. So really what you have to do is not only does the SSH agent have to ask for a password, it needs to prompt you for the contents of that packet that it's about to sign. Agent does not do that right now, so this is something that needs to be fixed in SSH if you're going to use it. On top of that, the RC doesn't enforce it at either end, which surprised me. I don't know what their thinking is there, but neither end actually verifies that the contents of what's getting signed by the agent actually makes sense. That is, are you actually signing a message for connecting from me to that guy, which is what I actually want? So this is something that's bigger than this work that you know needs to be talked about, you know, at a higher level, but I think it's a problem. Alright, that's it. Simple talk, simple toy. The code is up. You can download it and play with it. Early, early beta. Don't use it in production. Take it as a proof of concept. So, all right, thanks.